depending on which way you wanted to go, you could bring them under this net or not.
But, you know, all the substances that we're talking about are, none of them are made, they're all made from probably a mineral or from the sea or from the soil.
Right.
Some, you know, and this is what I was, I was wondering, I don't suppose you would be the one to ask, but maybe, but I was wondering what would the cost to enforce these regs if the Department of Labor had some.
You're correct, I'm not the one to ask it.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We can defer that question. Just one last question. How would the informational requirement meet the rational basis? The rational basis when there's no accepted toxic substance list.
It seems to me that you would have to look at the class of things which you are going to apply this requirement to. And if the classifications you've made are ones that you've gone through a rational analysis of it and said, well, these are the class of things which logically might well have toxic effects, and therefore we're going to have this information requirement for them, but here's another class where minimal likelihood of any toxic effect, and we're going to exclude those. As long as you go through that sort of rational process in deciding what's under it and what's out, then you've got your rational basis right there.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony this morning. Is there anyone else to be heard on House Bill 197? If not, we will conclude testimony on 197. We will continue work on this particular bill, primarily with the work between the committee to come up with some resolution. We would like to very rapidly get into House Bill 14. Mr. Barry is back with us. We invite him back to the table and entertain a series of questions. Mr. Barry, I had a couple of questions that I deferred yesterday that I'd like to pose at this time. Let me pose here.
Mr. Chairman, may I first, since I specifically asked to look it back up to confirm my point that I made yesterday on the division of authority between state agencies and the local governments, I was basically correct. If you have a municipality that has power to plan and zone or to zone, it is the controlling agency. They have coastal resource districts, which may be the coastal agency, the agency for making determinations, and the state only has jurisdiction where neither of those exist. I made that statement yesterday, but I wanted to
right.
verify it before
yeah.
putting it in concrete.
I got a series of that I wanted to try and get on record before we go. I didn't ask your question yesterday, and I needed to be more specific. The legality of Section 4462, 633C, and what exactly those terms mean. If we could go to that, I wanted to. That's on page 3 of the document.
What's the line?
Let's see.
Your lines 9 through 16, I believe.
Yep.
That's the theory you're talking about.
I'm going to have you comment on that.
Essentially, the framework of this is to set a time limit for a required permit and to provide that inaction, in effect, grants the permit. So you have a positive action, a positive result that derives from inaction. I think one could argue that the essential purpose of this is there is dissatisfaction with the time periods in which they're issued, so therefore you are setting a time, and that this time would be ineffective unless you did provide provide some mechanism for making the time period work. The second sentence is something that many permits end up in court. what you've done here is provide essentially that the record of the agency that heard the permit will be considered much as they consider, say, a trial court determination. In other words, you'll take it and you will, if they drew these inferences from the evidence, you will take the most favorable inferences, and even if the court disagrees, if in fact you could have reasonably drawn those, they will hold those inferences control, much the same way you do in an appeal in court. The presumption of regularity, all that does is mean that the agency decision is considered by the court to have gone through all of the proper processes. And if someone wants to, in other words, you don't have to go in and show that you went through all the hoops. If someone says you didn't, they have to come in and show that you didn't.
Okay. One additional question, and I'll defer to the committee members. Page 5, line 29, section 44, 62, 637, administrative appeal. Perhaps comment on the legal implication of A, and what is the appeal process if it is not under the Administrative Appeals Act?
That's
the Administrative Appeals Act.
Page 5, line 29, are not subject to the... Yes. The Administrative Procedure Act has a very formal mechanism by which appeals are made, the adjudicatory appeal process. By making it not subject to that act, you have made a, in essence, the appeal is an informal appeal rather than a formal appeal. You don't have to go through all that. You don't have to take evidence. So the administrative appeal is pretty much just an informal appeal to the head of the agency who decides what material will be needed to decide it.
Are there questions from the committee? Then I'll continue then. Let's go. A couple of other questions. Page 6.
Six through eight, I believe. You're looking at the proposed sponsor substitute, aren't you? That's what I'm looking for.
You know, that's why I was screwed up. I got the wrong one. Question, what is the legal meaning of dismissal? Is the decision of the matter for purposes of AS 4462638?
Mr. Chairman, there are, under the rules of appellate procedure, definite time limits set in which a decision may be appealed to the Superior Court. And here, of course, it's the time of the decision is when the appeal period starts to run. A summary dismissal without this could be argued as not a final disposition and therefore might not trigger the running of the appeal period, absent the section.
One last question then. Same page under the review by the Superior Court. Perhaps an explanation of the process and its meaning would be helpful to the committee if you could share that with us.
That gets a little complicated. What it is, of course, is the appellate rules are a body of rules about that thick that governs the way the contents, the whole procedure of appealing a decision of a trial court decision to the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court. What that does is, rather than attempt to set up a separate body of procedure, it uses the appellate procedure that the court system itself uses. In other words, the Superior Court would be sitting in effect at much like a Court of Appeals and use the Court of Appeals rules.
Are there questions from the committee members? Justice Wenchy?
Nellie, have you read the letter from Rich Horton Firm? It alludes to a number of your agreements. I guess I'm uncomfortable having someone else speak for our attorney. I guess I'd offer the opportunity for you to either agree or disagree with the statement.
What was your question, Mr. Wenchy?
Whether he has read the April 14th letter.
I haven't read it yet, so I doubt if it's very... Have you had a chance?
Yes, I've read it, Mr. Chairman.
Do you want to make comments since?
Essentially, there was a request that the attorney for CLS could discuss from a formal legal standpoint, not from whether they're good ideas or not, certain amendments they had proposed. I basically agree with the summary. There are points that in each of these, obviously, should you elect to do these, there's some rewriting I would want to do with them, but other than that, I haven't any disagreement with the technical matter stated in the letter.
The statements in here in regard to your positions are accurate.
They are accurate. Except, as I say, I think these probably would need rewriting if they were adopted.
Mr. Chairman, what's your intent? Essentially, I guess we have three drafts before us. We have the original and quasi substitute, and I don't know of a legislator named C. Alaska, but anyone has suggested endorsing that concept as well. I think we're reaching the point at some point in time here that we need to consider which draft we're going to use as a working document and seriously consider.
My recommendation to the committee that the actual working document would be the sponsor substitute, and we would give some consideration to the recommendation from C. Alaska. I would set a future meeting, calendar permit, to as a work session for this committee to review all of the data that we've received. The process to this point has been somewhat of an educational process, most of us being, in fact all of us, being new to the process, new to this piece of legislation. My understanding that it has been around for a while, and this is probably a major step to date to come to this point. There may be other persons with some recommendations, but at least this document will be the primary document of consideration. We'll make that
point, Mr. Chairman. On the 12th, Representative Ewing moved to place the proposed sponsor substitute before the committee as the bill that we worked on and was adopted. So that is the draft that the committee has accepted to be working on.
So if we are in the process of our deliberations concerning any additions, deletions, we should prepare those.
I would encourage committee members, if you'd like to, the floor session, to take your file, sign it out with the secretary to the committee, and study this, come up with your recommendation, look at the calendar, and try and reschedule. Representative Copeland, and then we publish it.
I have just digested what Mr. Barrier said about the rules of appellate procedure, and as I understand it, this then restricts the Superior Court in the scope of its inquiry. It cannot conduct it de novo. In other words, it can't look at everything. It only can look at what the agency has done and essentially treats the agency as if it were a court.
Precisely. It's a review on the record as opposed to a review de novo. You've stated the difference exactly.
But the agency is not a court. Therefore, I find great difficulty with this.
Okay. Is anyone else to be heard concerning House Bill 14?
It's hard to be so slow.
If not, the meeting is adjourned.